Today is Thursday, April the 11th. We're going to hear Rav Moshe Soloveitchik's shiur on the Haggadah.
I'd like to wish everybody a kosher and fair for Pesach coming up, Shabbos. I'd like to take a moment and thank Young Israel again and again because they are so generous with us. They allow us to come here and have this wonderful class with Rabbi Soloveitchik and the communities. And when I get here, the tables are already set up to go. And then I have human beings, friends, that come here early and help me schlep the food out of the car and set it up at the table there so everybody can enjoy it. And there's so many people who have been so generous, bringing plates, plasticware, all kinds of cups, and just really wonderful. And I just want to thank all of you for doing what you do and your generosities. So we're going to be davening Maariv just a couple of minutes right after. Please don't leave. Come and daven with us. We can use you. And once again, I want to thank everybody for coming, and I want to wish everybody a beautiful holiday.
No class next week.
No class next week.
Next couple of weeks.
Or at least 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I want to get massive.
Thank you, Rabbi Berger.
All right, we're going to start learning the Haggadah. Probably not going to get very far. It might be like some of the people at the Seder. Anyway, but after the first cup. Anyway, so one of the questions that the Rishonim already discussed it, I honestly don't really comprehend many of the answers that they give. But the mitzvah, the saying the Haggadah is the fulfillment of the mitzvah, the Igadah Talavincha Bayom Huleymor, Amartem, all kinds to tell your children, to tell your guests, to tell your spouse, to tell yourself about the events that took place when the Jewish people left Egypt. The question is, all mitzvos have a bracha. Oh, no, I shouldn't say all. Most mitzvos have a bracha to be recited on them. So the Rishonim already were troubled by the question, why is there no bracha on the Haggadah? They give all kinds of answers. Some say you already fulfilled the mitzvah with Kiddush. Now, it's not clear whether the Kiddush, they mean to say that the Kiddush serves as a bracha in the Haggadah, or they mean to say the basic law of talking about the Exodus, you already fulfilled, not completely, you already fulfilled with the Kiddush. So since you already fulfilled it, so you don't make a bracha. It's not clear what they mean. There are other terutzim that are mentioned. Some say that the Birchas Kriyashma, we Gal Yisrael, we say, so that serves as the bracha also on the Haggadah. These are not terutzim that are very obvious. And I've always been troubled by this question, how to understand why we don't make a bracha. I want to suggest an answer. I don't think I haven't seen this answer, at least I don't remember having seen this answer. So, and I can't say that I thoroughly evaluated it, but this is the thought that came to me this afternoon when I was thinking about it. In the Holach Manya, that's on page 8 in the Maxwell House Haggadah. So, page 8 in the Maxwell's Haggadah, we say, Holach Manya, the Cholah Vasana Bar de Mitzrayim. This is the bread of affliction, or the poor bread that our ancestors ate in the land of Egypt. We invite everybody in and we say, well, next year everything's going to be much better. We're going to be in the land of Israel. We're going to be free, whatever. So the question is, the Rambam, in his Haggadah, the Rambam has some minor differences in his Haggadah than we have. The Halach Manya, he starts with 4 or 5 extra words. Before we say Halach Manya, he says, Bebehilu, in a rush, Yatsu Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, did the Jews go out of Egypt? Halach Manya, this is the poor man's bread. Now, the question is, why did he add those words? Why was it necessary for the Rambam to add, as the introduction to the Halach Manya, the words Bevehilu in a rush? Did the Jewish people leave Egypt? But the answer is very simple. The Gemara in Psachim, and the answer to this question, I've seen my uncle's name and my great uncle's name, there are quite a few people that took it from them. Didn't give them the credit, though. Anyway, so the answer is because there are many drushos in the Gemara on the word lechemoni, poor bread or bread of affliction. But actually, poor bread is the better translation. I hate to disagree with Maxwell House, but it's poor bread. Poor bread is the better translation according to the explanation of Chazal. Now, so there are many explanations, but two of them I just want to mention two. One says, why do we call matzah the poor bread? Because you break it. Poor people didn't have whole food. And I'm not giving an advertisement for any store. Anyway, so it was broken, sort of like the shirayim of other people's meals, you know. So one reason why it's called the poor bread or the poor man's bread is because it's broken. And that's indicative of somebody who wasn't well-to-do. However, there is another explanation, and says poor people tend to make their food quickly. They value their time. So it says when they make the bread, the husband is busy making the fire, the wife is knitting the dough, and they move very quickly. They move very quickly. Now, the question is, at what point in the Haggadah do we break the matzah? So, our custom is, we break it right before. You can see, even Maxwell House points that out, I think. Then the leader takes the middle matzah and breaks it into two. So he says, right before the Halach Manya, that's when we break it. So obviously, when we say immediately, this is the poor bread, we have reference to the fact that the matzah is broken. However, the Rambam's opinion happens to be that it's broken before the Hamotzi, much later in the Haggadah. So we couldn't have reference here to talking about the matzah being broken. So what are we talking about? We're talking about the fact that matzah is made very quickly. Poor people make their food very, very quickly. So that's why the Rambam adds the words bivahil. So then the question is, so what's the relevancy of the poor man's bread here in the Haggadah? So he says, bivahilu yatsu Yisrael Mitzrayim. In a rush did the Jews go out of Egypt. Halach manya. This is because the Jews didn't have time for the dough to rise. The matzah was made very quickly. That's what we have reference to. What's the significance of it? What's the significance of the fact that they didn't have enough time? In other words, because if you take a look at the matzah zu shanu ochlin. That's page 22. Matzah zu shanu ochlin al shema. Why do we why do we eat this matzah for what do we eat this matzah? There's all kinds of explanations. Mishum shelo hispik tzekem shalavasein lahachmitz. It's eaten because the dough of our ancestors had not time to become leavened before the Supreme King of Kings, the Most Holy, blessed He, revealed Himself unto them and redeemed them. And he redeemed them. And the Rambam adds one word, miyad. He redeemed them right away. The Rambam in his Haggadah says that it doesn't just say he redeemed them, but it says he redeemed them right away, quickly. The Rambam emphasizes in his Haggadah time and time again, not just that God redeemed us, but God redeemed us right away. Why is it that way? So, the simple answer, and it could be understood, and I think my uncle points that out, in the fact that look at page 13. Baruch Shomer Hafta, last paragraph. Baruch Shomer Hafta Kosol Yisrael. Blessed is he who watched over his commitment. I'm translating it different than they do. Who watched over his commitment or observed his commitment to the Jewish people, Baruch Hu, blessed is he, Shahakadosh Baruch Hu, Chishev Hesekets, because God computed the Kates, the end of the slavery, in such a way that the Jewish people should be redeemed a little earlier, because God told Abraham that they'll be slaves for 400 years. So the years didn't begin when Yosef went down to Egypt. It began from the time Yitzhak was born. But the Rambam had a different text in the Haggadah again. Instead of Chishev as a case, he computed the end of captivity. Mechashev as a case. He is computing now the future in the manner that he had promised to our father Avram. In other words, not only he computed the future, the years, in the first exile, the exile of Egypt, to make it come quicker, but he's doing it now in our exile also. Mechashev esekates. So in other words, according to the Rambam, part of the purpose of the Haggadah is not just to learn history, but part of the purpose of the Haggadah is to learn from history about the future. That just as God redeemed the Jewish people quickly, he's going to redeem them quickly again. Now, I always mention what my uncle said. My uncle said that there seems to be a contradiction in the Rambam. On one hand, the Rambam says the Jewish people will only be redeemed with tshuva. On the other hand, the Rambam says that you have to believe that Mashiach could come at any moment. So how do you put the two together? The answer is, our faith in the coming of Mashiach is grounded in our faith in the Jewish people. We have to believe that the Jewish people can do tshuva in any moment. But the idea behind, according to the Rambam, and even if you don't accept the Rambam's total approach, but it's clear that the Haggadah is stressing not only the redemption of the Jewish people, but the fact that when the redemption came, it came quickly. Quickly. So, I think, and Pesach night, in a sense, we are trying to re-experience. We are trying to re-experience the redemption. And we have to focus not just on the fact that the redemption took place, but the redemption took place. When it took place, it happened overnight. And we find, by the way, you know, even in our own lifetime, historical events that happened almost overnight. The fall of the Soviet Union. The fall of the Soviet Union happened almost overnight. So not just Soviet Union, all of the communist, of most of the communist countries in Europe, it happened almost overnight. So the redemption, when we re-experience, we have to try to re-experience that idea as well. Now, the question is, what is bracha? Bracha is preparation for a mitzvah. Bracha takes away from the spontaneous nature that we want to see the gula. In other words, the gula, it will take place, it took place, when it did take place, very quickly. We want to emphasize the fact that it happened very quickly. The idea of bracha, when do we say a bracha? We say a bracha at the end. Asher golanu v'golos avoseinu v'mitzrayim. When we're looking back, after we say the whole story, then we make the bracha. But in order to emphasize, it's like we didn't have a chance even to prepare for the gula, for the redemption. Bracha represents preparation. Because of that, we could suggest that's why there is no bracha on the Haggadah. That's an answer that we could suggest. Okay, now, Kol Dichvin Yeseh V'Yechal, Kol Ditzrich Yeseh V'Yivsach. So we invite those who are poor, we say Hashat Tohachat, we are this year here, L'Shana Haba, Hashat Ta'avde, L'Shana Haba B'nei Chorin. Now, so this year we are servants here, but next year we hope. Next year we should be free men in the land of Israel. Free in the land of Israel. I have to be careful today. Anyway, so we have to free. You never know whether they can file suit against me. Anyway, free in the land of Israel. Now, the word Chorin is very interesting. Now, I remember many years ago, I think I was a student in high school at the time, was the first Pesach I was in Chicago. My father was speaking, and he was speaking about the Maamar Chazal. The Medrash says, the Torah says, Choras al Luchos, the words on the Luchos, on the tablets, on the Ten Commandments, were engraven. So the Medrash says, Al Tikra Choras al Cheres, do not call it Choras, but free. The Torah, in a sense, offers us the opportunity to be free people. So, I don't remember exactly how my father explained it. It's possible he explained it like the Likutei Torah, because Likutei Torah says that you have writing that's on the surface, when you write with a pen or whatever, and you have writing that's engraven. Writing on the surface, that's something that's separate from the person if you're writing on his surface. If it's engraven, the person, the object, that and the letters become one. So Torah has to, in order to be a Ben Chorin, it's not enough that you have Torah on the surface. You have to have Torah in you, have to be one. Ki hu chayechem v'orech yameichem. It is your life. It's not extraneous to you. So it's possible that that's what my father said, mentioned. I don't remember, but I remember him saying, we're walking to shul, he said, the word cheres is not mentioned in Tanakh at all. Not mentioned in Tanakh at all. And then he says, but there is a similar word mentioned in Tanakh, chorim. Okay, with those days, we davened in the Mizrahi Shul on 4th Avenue, and my father sat in the front row, and next to him was Rabbi Hirsch Eisenberg, who was known as a great Hebraist, and my father said to him, is Cheres mentioned in Tanakh at all? So he said he has to check. Okay. Then he came Mincha time, or the next davening, he came back. I think it was Mincha, actually. He came and he said, he mentioned that Chorim is mentioned, which my father had told me also. Chorim is mentioned. So my father said, but that's not Cheres. But I think, and I don't have the impression that my father disagreed, that there is a relationship between the word chorim, which is found about 6-7 times in Tanakh, and cheres. What does chorim mean? Chorim means a person of nobility who has certain type of character traits. It's that has a certain character traits. The Pasuk of Mishlei says, you know, happy is the one who has a king who is chorim, and not drunk, you know. In other words, you can have people who have high positions, but they have the character traits of people of a lower class, a lower class of people. So I think that the word cheres, we have many words. You have, we talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim. We talk about being saved. We talk about Geula. But what does it mean? What is the concept of Chorin? In other words, we're not emphasizing just the lack of a negative. When we talk about the slaves being free, we are not saying anything other than they don't have a master over them. But there is a difference in the personality, and it's important to realize that in ancient times, certainly when this part of the Haggadah was composed, this is probably in the Roman period. And in the Roman period, let's say in Rome, between 30% and 40% of Rome were slaves. So it wasn't, you know, It was classes of people. There were classes of people. And the idea of B'nai Chorin is not just that you don't have a master on you, but it has to do with the nature of the personality of the person. That the person, it's not just something negative is removed. The bondage is removed. It's something positive about the person who is no longer a slave. No longer a slave, not only because there's no longer a master, because he's a different type of person. So the idea here is, Hashata Hachel Hashanah Babar Yisrael Hashata Abdei. We are slaves now. We're not always slaves. You can't say that Haggadah was not written for 1 year in time. But our personalities are influenced by the countries where we are. Matter of fact, it's interesting. The Gemara in Ksuvah says, the Gemara in Ksuvah says that somebody who leaves Eretz Yisrael for Chutz Laretz, leaving Eretz Yisrael for Chutz Laretz, so is ki'ilu oved avodah zara. It's like he's worshiping idolatry. So the question is, why is it like worshiping idolatry? Why is it like worshiping idolatry? So the Rambam in his Igros, in his letters, he says that it's not so much worshiping idolatry literally, but we are influenced by the culture of idolatry. We're influenced by the culture of idolatry. Now the problem is, the Gemara, when it mentions that, the Gemara says that a person who lives in Eretz Yisrael, it's better to live in a city in Eretz Yisrael, in a town or a community that is completely non-Jewish, than to live in a foreign country in an area that is completely Jewish. Translating it in contemporary terms, it is better to live in Ramallah than it is in Borough Park in Williamsburg, and that's even before the measles was going around. Now, so the question is, how are we, the question is, He said, "How's that work? Why? Because if you live in outside Eretz Yisrael, it's like worshiping idolatry. So the Rambam in the Igro says that it's considered like worshiping idolatry because you're affected by the culture of the country, and then he says it's better living in Ramallah. How are we to understand that?" But the answer is very simple. When you live in a country, you're affected by the culture, not just by the culture of the contemporary culture. You're affected. The culture includes past years also. Certainly in Eretz Yisrael, it's there. When somebody lives in Eretz Yisrael, he's not just living with this generation. He is living with historical Israel. He's living with Avram, with Yitzchak, with Yaakov. All the generations are coming together. So I think, and to a certain degree, this idea of we have to, like we just went out of Egypt, it's an idea of the joining of the generations. Pesach is a holiday where we try to remove the wedge of time that separates us from the former generations. So that's when he says, Hashata Avdei Lashana Haba B'nei Chorin, because wherever we are, We are slaves to our culture. There might not be somebody whipping us, but the culture has become our masters. The culture has become our masters. But when you live in Eretz Yisrael, when you live in Eretz Yisrael, then we're really B'nai Chorin. Because then our personalities are molded. Our personalities are molded by the generations of the Jewish people. So this is the idea of Ben-Chorin. And it's important. This is important. Why is this mentioned here? I think when we invite poor people in, and that's what this is. You know, before Pesach, I'm not making an appeal. You always have Mo's Chitin. People give money for the poor, whatever it is, to help them get through Pesach, this meals, whatever it might be. Now, but this is a step above that, the Halach Manya. We're saying we want you to be guests at our table. We want you to know that even though you are poor, even though you don't have some of the bare necessities, you and us are together. We are part of the same group. There is no class system. That's the idea of Lashon HaBa B'nai Chorin, because ultimately our personalities will be affected, will have the noble personalities, as the word Chorim means. You find in Kehelas Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud Zayin, that our personalities, people, unfortunately, people who are poor, sometimes and a lot of it is sometimes due to the fact, the perception that they sense that other people have about them. You know, years ago, when I first moved to Chicago, there was one very nice thing about Chicago. They lost that thing, but anyway, there was a very nice thing about Chicago. When you looked at the day schools, and you looked who were on the board, which parents were on the board of the day schools, you had rich parents, and you had poor parents. Parents who were very devoted to the school. They gave hours and hours of their day when they had it for the school. And there was one person I knew who was really a poor person, but he was very devoted to one of the day schools. And he was always excited about the day schools. And I would talk to him of what's going on in the school. I wanted to engage him in conversation. And he said to me, one time I talked to him, I said, what's going on? He said, I'm not on the board anymore. They say we're dead wood.
Dead wood.
That's the expression. It's the first time I heard the expression. Could be the last time. But that was the expression that they had. There was a creation of a class system, almost as bad as the class system in India. The idea of B'nai Chorin, what we're telling him here, is that, you know why we're special? We're special because we're Jewish. If we don't recognize them as being special, then we are not special. We say in the Haggadah, "B'chol dor v'dor chayav adam liros l'atzmo ki luchu yotzim Yisrael," as if a person has to see himself as if he went out of Egypt. The lowest of Avoseinu b'vad hotzi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Avos Amim Yisrael. Not only our ancestors, afal sonu golim, even us in the plural form. The mitzvah of seeing ourselves being redeemed, of being B'nai Chorin, is not just the mitzvah of seeing myself being redeemed. It's a mitzvah of seeing the Jewish people in its entirety as being redeemed. It's in the plural form. And that's the idea. Holachmanya. Why all of a sudden become big machnisei orech? Why? Hachnasas orchim is a mitzvah every time. Why the emphasis? I always say because Pesach is the holiday of Avram. You take it, everybody asks the question. I mentioned, why isn't Moshe's name mentioned in the Haggadah? So they say, because Anivalo Malach, Anivalo Shliach. You know whose name is mentioned in the Haggadah? Avram Avinu's name is mentioned time and time again. Why? To me, Pesach is the celebration of the fact that God fulfilled, recognition of the fact that God fulfilled his commitment to Avram Avinu. And Avram is the symbol of chesed. Avram is the symbol of kindness. We know Avram stands outside his tent, kechom hayom, when it's, and he can't eat his meal until he's able to bring somebody else in to the meal. We start off the Seder, we're trying to follow the path, the mandate of Avram Avinu. Holachmanya the Chavsan Khan said, Kol Dichvin, whoever is hungry, let him come in and eat. And Avram, he stands on them, Lishorsam. He not only is interested in their being able to eat, he wants them to have a good feeling about themselves. With Rus and Boaz, what's the emphasis? Boaz didn't just tell Rus, take food. He says, sit together with all my workers. Don't sit to a side. That is part of the idea of Yetzias Mitzrayim. The part of the idea of the Seder. Not just this is the holiday of Avram Avinu. But at the same time, even though Avram is the symbol of Chesed, and Avram did Chesed for non-Jews also. The three Malachim were not Jews. But Avram is also the symbol of the idea that the Jewish people are a separate people. You know something? I find it very interesting. Pesach is the holiday of separation. We separated ourselves. Goy mekarev goy. When do we give special recognition to the nations of the world? It's Sukkos. We give the karbonis. Now, if you take a look at the newspapers, the advertisements, you see all the interfaith seders on Pesach. When we're celebrating the separation of the Jewish people, and then Sukkot, you don't see anything. Most of them don't even know there's a holiday of Sukkot. The idea, this is the holiday of Avram Avinu. Avram is the symbol of chesed, and at the same time, and symbol of chesed even for non-Jews, but he, at the same time, he's the idea of the Jewish people being a separate people. When Avram Avinu goes to the Akedah, he tells the two Na'arav. Some say it was Yishmael and Eliezer. Shvulachem poem achamor. Stay here. Naniva hanar nelchad kot. This is where we have to separate ways. But it's not a permanent separation. The neshuv aleichem will return. And vayelchu yachtov, even afterwards, they go back together. We have to know where we have to have areas of separation and where we have to have areas of involvement. Religion is a very personal thing for the Jewish people. That's one of our areas. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't have an influence. Avram Avinu, no one had the influence that Avram Avinu had on the world. But we have to know there's something special. This is the Halach Manya. It's the holiday of Avram. It's the Chesed. Because Avram's chesed was not just in giving them something. Avram's chesed was people in giving people a good feeling about themselves. And that's what Pesach is. Pesach, we have to give people a good feeling. It's not enough. Here's some matzahs and goodbye. It's join with us. Come with us. Be part of us. So that's okay. So that's about the halach manya. Now, what time is it now?
8:25.
Okay, what time do I start?
Another 5 minutes. One more.
Okay. All right, so. Okay. So we start off by I'll say something from the Brisker Rav that the Brisker Rav said. It says Va'etein lo es Yitzchak, talking about Avraham Avinu, I gave him Yitzchak. Va'etein li Yitzchak es Yaakov Esav, and I gave him Yaakov Esav. Va'etein le Esav es Haseir le Reshus also. I gave Esav Mount Seir as an inheritance. Yaakov Avanav Yardu Mitzrayim. Yaakov and his sons went down to Egypt. So the question is, the question is. That you, if you're, first of all, why mention Esav? Yoshua, this is something from Yeshua. Yeshua is giving a history of the Jewish people. He mentions Esav. And if you want to say he wants to be fair to everybody, give everybody, so why not mention Yishmael? So, this way the Arabs can complain that the Jews and the Christians are all out against them. Anyway, so the Brisker Rav said a very, very good thought. It's based on a Reb Chaim. He said like this, Yishmael was disqualified from birth to be the successor to Avram. The Torah says, the Gemara says in the Darim, that if somebody says, I'm not going to derive benefit from the descendants of Avram, he's allowed to derive benefit from the descendants of Esav. Why? Because Torah says, Kiv Yitzhak Yikar L'Chazara. From Yitzhak will be your descendants. From Yitzhak and not all of Yitzhak. And this was said to Avram before Yitzchak was born. Kivi Yitzchak Yikar L'Chazara. From Yitzchak. So even before he was born, the descendants of Avram was Yitzchak. Yishmael was excluded. However, Yaakov and Esav, Kivi Yitzchak V'lo Kol Yitzchak, Yaakov and Esav each had the chance to be the successor to Avram. But only one of them would be the successor. That's why he asked a strange question. Well, how was he able to sell the Bechorah, the birthright, for a pot of lentil soup? You know, there was one rabbi, he wasn't Orthodox, I'm not going to go further than that. There was one rabbi who wasn't Orthodox, who was a Kohen. And part of, in those days especially, part of the business of rabbis was doing funerals. Being a Kohen, that limited the money that he could make in the rabbinate. So what did he do? We're now standing at Mechiras Chametz time. So he decided he'll sell his kahuna. I'm not sure to who, but he sold his kahuna, just like we sell chametz, you know. And he sold his kahuna. Now, so the question is, was Yaakov and Esav doing the same thing? He said the birthright? Where did they get? What was the foundation of this idea that Esav could sell his birthright? But the answer is, Ki v'yitzchak v'lo kol yitzchak. It wasn't determined who will be the successor, but only one of them could be the successor. That allowed Esav to give up his chance. That allowed Esav to give up his chance. So the Brisker Rav said, Yitzchak, so Yishmael was excluded from birth. No one has a matter of fact. The Gemara says that Esav was considered a Jew. His descendants not. Esav Yisrael Mumer Haver. He was a sinning Jew. So he was a Jew. But the Esav Nasati is Haseir Lereshis also. Who cares? What do we need to know that Esav got Haseir for? Why is that important to Jewish history? The answer is, Avram was told, your descendants, before they start their nation, they're going to be slaves and immigrants in a land that's not theirs. Esav starts his nation right away. He gets his country right away. Yaakov, one of Yerdu Mitzrayim, Yaakov is the true successor to Avram. So he goes down to Egypt before he starts. Why was that necessary? Brisker Rav didn't go into that. But the answer is very simple. God wanted Avram's nation to be a perpetual nation, a nation that will exist forever. All the other nations, when they encountered difficult circumstances, they crumbled. The Jewish people alone survived, not just as a religion, but as a nation based on religion, survived exile twice, an exile for almost 2,000 years the second time. Why? Because they dealt with these circumstances in their very foundation as a nation. And that's part of what Pesach is about. Part of what Pesach is about is to understand that the Shibud Mitzrayim, part of it was for the Jewish people to become a perpetual people. And that's part of the Havtacha that God gave to Avram. B'chol dor v'dor omdim aleinu l'chalsenu. In every generation they try to destroy. V'hakadosh Baruch Hu matzilenu miyadam. God saves us. He saves us because of what he does in this time. But he saves us in this time also because what he did then.
Thank you so much. There's no class next 2 weeks. We're going to be diving tomorrow in about 2 or 3 minutes. Please all stick around and participate. I want to wish everybody a wonderful Pesach, kosher, and